It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
This is Pete Fopiano sitting in for Steve Jackson, California Wine Country with Dan Berger. Today it is featuring Boletto Wines, and we have Anthony Beckman from Boletto Wines, and we have another regular, Barry Herbst from Bottle Barn. I was just telling Barry that I usually give out a lot of wine for clients and employees and Christmas gifts and whatever, so we spent quite a bit of time patronizing his establishment for Christmas. And
we appreciate that.
Trying to figure out, you know, who likes what different kind of wine and whatnot, and it was great. It was a wonderful experience and a great place to go if you're looking to purchase some wine at a very, very reasonable price. But I am not the expert on this show. Dan Berger is the expert, so I am going to turn it over to Dan Berger, and I'm going to let him run with it and tell us what you got for us today.
First of all, expert is one of those phrases that has multiple meanings, and I don't know any of the definitions. So
I define that as somebody who knows more about it than me, so
all right,
go
all right.
for it.
You're I'll right. go for that. Yeah, Anthony has been making the wines at Boletto for several years, and what I always like about these wines is that they really are from the heart of the Russian River Valley. If you don't pick up Russian River character in every single one of his wines, then there's something wrong with your nose. I mean, this stuff is really
quintessential,
typical, classic, and I don't know how you can do that when you're making so many different SKUs and doing it with such precision from year to year to year.
And, you know, it's we were just – speaking of SKUs, we were just looking at my bottling schedule for the year, and we'll do 19 different wines for the 2018 vintage, which is crazy. So it's 9 single vineyard Pinot Noirs, you know, 5 different Chardonnays, Pinot Gris, which I love, which I have the 18 sample of, Rosé, Syrah, Gewurz, which nobody thinks about but is an awesome wine.
Always good.
And it's crazy.
Any new weird wines that you're experimenting with down the road, maybe?
Not so much weird, but definitely mm-hmm. new. We have a brand new vineyard coming online in 2018. So it's a 5-acre vineyard that we planted 3 years ago, and it's Pinot Noir, and it is just south of River Road. It'll be our warmest site, right off Trenton Road and River, and I have 4 barrels of that. So 5 acres and 4 barrels of third leaf, small crop, and I'm very excited to do it as the first, like, what is this vineyard going to be for the next 30 years? It's like the very glimpse of 30 years of wine and vineyard, and I'm incredibly excited to put that in.
Now, I'd be interested to know what clones you put in there, because it is a warmer region.
You know, there's a lot of talk on Pinot clones, and I have this theory of the Holy Trinity is what I call it. And I only need 3 clones, and it's Calera and Mount Eden and Swan. And those 3 clones, to me, give me everything I could ever want for a Pinot Noir.
Well, you've got the 3 best clones for historical reasons, because Calera, of course, being put into that chalky soil, and then the Mount Eden, which is mountain-grown, mm-hmm. typically. So you get a little bit of that character from that aggressive growth and the hardiness. But the Swan is the most interesting of all, because it comes right from that region, literally right from that region.
It does. And to me, each one, you know, the Calera is all about structure and tannin. The Swan is all about these really pretty aromatics. And the Mount Eden kind of fills in the middle. I really don't need anything more. People talk about clones, and I sort of start to zone out now. And I'm like, yeah, I know what I want. You know, I planted with John Boletto. I've been there 13 years, so I planted and designed several vineyards with the Boletto family. And what I really started to learn is that the clones that came to California, what I call the California Heritage clones, there's a reason they're California Heritage clones, is because they work really well in California with our climate. With the Dijon clones that were all bred in Burgundy to really get ripe faster. They don't work, in my opinion, as well in California. I want something that gets ripe a little slower, that stays green a little longer, that retains acidity a little bit longer. You know, we're not Burgundy. We shouldn't try to be Burgundy, and the wine shouldn't taste like Burgundy. And these clones that came in the 60s and 70s, 50s actually, goes way back, you know, there's a reason these early vintners hand-selected them out of the thousands of sticks they had growing in the ground, and they tasted these grapes, and they selected them and propagated them, and there's and they knew. I mean, they didn't have any analysis or DNA or any of the fancy stuff we have now. They tasted it, and they said, this grapes, this clone is the best clone for our region, and I just... What an awesome thing for them to do. And now to go back, you know, 40, 50 years and say, wow, they nailed it. You know, those early pioneers, they nailed it.
Makes a lot of sense.
Some of the prior work goes all the way back to the 40s, and it was really, you might just say it was serendipitous. Andrei Chelyachev and Louis Martini actually joined forces in the 40s to put in some Pinot Noir in the Carneros, and as time has gone by, those... selections have proven to be pretty successful. And the funny part is that to this day, you've got a lot of winemakers making exceptionally good Pinot Noirs using these old, old, old selections that have been around forever.
And right and true.
Yeah. And it's all I need, you know. That's it. Three. The Holy Trinity. I call it the Holy Trinity. People say, what do you plant? I want three clones. Very simple. Very straightforward.
So you're not selling the 18 just yet, and I know you've brought it with you, and I'm sitting here slathering to get a sniff of that.
Oh, so perfect.
The 18. Okay, there we go.
I do. I have rosé of Pinot Noir.
It's the pink.
And it's and this just bottled. So it's been in the bottle just about 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks. Actually, we did it right before the holidays.
So nicely aged.
Yeah, tremendously aged. It is really a leeway into how gorgeous the 2018 vintage is. I always say if you can bottle rosé, and it's always the first thing we bottle. It's always one of the first things we pick, one of the first things we bottle. And to me, it's the indicator for the entire harvest. When the rosé is screaming good, I feel like the rest of the harvest will follow suit. To me, the aromatics on this wine are just booming.
Unbelievable. In fact, if I didn't know you better, I would have guessed that you might have put in about 2% Gewürztraminer in here. It's so spicy.
Yeah, it's got a huge aromatics, and it's more than just fruit, which I like a lot. But the funny thing is I can smell it. I'm not even, like, sniffing the glass. I can smell it from, like, 2 feet from me. It's got this gorgeous, booming aromatics. And again, I really started making this wine in this style in 2009, was when I switched. I first started at Boletto Vineyards in harvest of 2007. It took me about 2 years to, number one, take out all the sugar. Number two, switch to a whole cluster process as opposed to Saunier, which I truly believe in. And then 2009 was the first vintage where I was like, boom, and incredibly happy with the wine. And then after that, we've just followed suit, you know, year after year after year, and it's really a house style for a rosé.
Now, I may be wrong about this, but is this drier than last year's?
You know, I have not put any sugar in terms of just sweetness. I haven't had more than a gram of sugar in 6-7 years.
What I mean is the acidity and pH more structured?
I think it's more phenolic. I think that there's this grip on the background that's adding structure without weight, which is what I always like to think about with wines. So you get this real, and you know, I hate to use the word minerality. I always think of things as more a texture on your mouth that people use the word minerality to describe. But it's weight without viscosity is the way I like to think about it. So you get this nice long length without something that's like a lead brick, you know, hitting you in the face.
It's a beauty.
It's an absolutely stunning wine.
More aromatic than I remember last year's.
And I think, well, it's also
it's also age, yeah, right? I mean, this is like, this is a brand new, you know, it's still booming. And so we as winemakers, we see this all the time where we'll make a wine that we love and it's booming, booming, booming. And then you put it in the bottle and it slowly, you know, mellows out. So for me personally, this is too big right now. I mean, it's booming too much. For me personally, but I know after having made this wine for, you know, 12 or 13 years, pretty much in the same style, I know that with time, that boomingness, you know, it goes in, the fruit and the spicy come together. It gets to be much more seamless. It gets, I consider, it loses its baby fat. You know, right now, it's like a third grader, and it's running around in circles in the glass.
Yeah,
and it will, you know, in the next 18 months, it will calm down and really be cohesive. Not to say that it isn't super fun right now. I mean, it's super fun right now. Crazy fun.
That's an interesting analogy of a third grader running around or so forth.
It is. Well, I guess I have one at home.
Maybe that's easy to relate. This is California Wine Country. Dan Berger is here with two guests. We have Anthony Beckman from Belletta Wines that we are sampling, and of course Barry Herbst from Bottle Barn, who carries these and many, many other selections of wines at some of the most reasonable prices, perhaps, in Sonoma County. I have a question for Dan before we let everybody get back into it. We're drinking a rosé. Now, rosés used to be, you know, fairly popular about, you know, 25, 30 years ago or so, and they seem to decline. But isn't it the case now that they seem to be on an upswing? They're kind of making a comeback.
You could write 3 books on the history of rosé.
I'll let you do that.
I won't bore you with the details. White Zinfandel was the precursor of some of this. But really, White Zinfandel was not considered to be a fine wine. Sometime in the late 70s and early 80s, it was dry. And then Sutter Home had a problem. They got a stuck fermentation. The wine came out sweet, and I predicted they wouldn't sell it. That's how good I am. So millions and millions of cases of sweet White Zinfandel later. Dry rosé is a common wine in France in the cafes outside of Paris, but it's not called rosé. It's called the house wine. And there's no such thing as a white. And what color you get is somewhere between pink and red. And you do not order it. It just comes with your lunch. It's included. And so a lot of people in the south of France are drinking a lot of rosé that really is red wine with no particular attention to color. In this case, we're dealing with people who are absolute lovers of this style. They're winemakers from up and down California, also in Oregon, Washington. Everybody's making rosé. It started out with Robert Sinsky Winery making about 38 cases of it, finding out that they sold it in about an hour. Started making more, and pretty soon everybody's making rosé. William Selyem makes a tiny bit of rosé. I mean, everybody's making rosé. The Belletta has been one of the most successful in California for the simple reason that, number one, Pinot Noir is one of the two grape varieties that does Pinot Noir best, the other one being Grenache. The second reason is that Anthony has really honed in on this astounding dry style, which actually comes across as if there's almost a touch of sweetness in it, but there is none. There's no sugar here. So it's just the balance of the wine. It's perfect wine. So no matter what you're eating, this is it. Whatever you're having, red wine or white wine conflict, just go for the rosé.
Super flexible.
Yeah.
And goes with all kinds of stuff.
A safe bet here. Now, I see, Anthony, you have more than one bottle here.
That's how I go.
Some people take luggage, you take wine, which of course goes in keeping with your profession.
So they trimmed it down for us.
I did.
Only 90. Well, I don't think we have that much time, although we could give it a shot.
It's like speed dating, speed drinking.
So we've had the rosé, and Dan has given us some insights here. Tell us about some of the other wines that you've brought here.
Sure. You know, coming at the tail end of the 2018 vintage, I thought it'd be fun since we have the rosé in bottle, 2018 rosé in bottle that we just tasted. And I'm really, you know, this is the first time I've tasted it since we bottled it. So it was pretty awesome to pull the cork and have it show as it did because, you know, it's always a surprise. It's like being a parent. You know, you get everything perfect and you put it in the bottle and you ship it off into the world, and this is literally the first time I've tasted it since we put it to bottle, and I was
incredible. It's fantastic, and people should go out and buy a bunch of it because it's going to be the best.
It's super yummy. I'm thrilled.
It's showing really well.
Then I have the flip side of that, which is this sample bottle I brought. This is also a 2018. This is the Belletta Pinot Gris. This, to me, is one of the most understated and one of my most favorite wines that I've ever made in my life. I truly think that John Belletta has planted a vineyard that is unsurpassed in terms of quality for Pinot Gris. Since the 14 harvest, when the what we call Mary's Vineyard has come online, the Pinot Gris has just really become a statement wine for Bledel Vineyards. And this is the 2018 we're about to pour. It just came out of barrel less than a week ago. So this was fermented in neutral oak barrels. So we took just freshly pressed Pinot Gris juice. We put it into old white barrels and did a complete fermentation in barrel. Again, last week it just came out of barrel for the first time. This will bottle in about 5 weeks. Just getting it settled and clear. You can see it's still murky. You can see it's like, you know, we're talking
like
about
coconut
the,
water. Right
yeah,
now.
we're talking about the rosé being young wine. Well, this is like pre-young wine. You know, this is it. I mean, this is what we do. So for me, I see wine samples like this all the time. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would be fun to take this wine and pour it in. And Dan, why don't you pour some around and pass it around, and then I'll talk a little bit about this vineyard. This vineyard is located in really what's become an incredible spot in Sonoma County for grape growing, and that's the Sebastopol Hills. So this is a just under 1,000 feet elevation. It's about 11 miles from the ocean. It sits on top of where Burnside Road and Goldridge Road meet. Mm. It is a site where if you planted it to Pinot Noir, you could sell it for a whole lot more money than if you planted.
So this wasn't a profit motivated choice. Obviously.
This is not a profit motivated choice. You know, John Bledel has often been asked, you know, why do you have Pinot Gris here? It's 8 acres. It's a substantial vineyard holding for this sort of park place and boardwalk of Sonoma County wine growing. And John, and I love John for this. John is always like, I liked Pinot Gris.
He doesn't need any other reasons.
And it's sort of like the mic drop, right? And there you stop it. It is really a wine to me that is a statement, not about money and not about anything, but this is just a genuine, incredible wine. I'm picking this. I have added nothing to it. There's no acid added. There's really nothing added to it. This is a statement of that vineyard, Mary's Vineyard, at the intersection of Burnside and Goldridge Roads, and it's just super fun.
Pinot Gris is a very strange grape in a certain way because it really doesn't exist as a standalone in some countries where it does grow. It doesn't really make a very interesting wine. Pinot Grigio from Italy can be pretty boring. This is pretty exciting. When we get back from our next break, I want you to give me some details about this.
Well, it's almost like the Syrah of white wines. It doesn't have a real clear image. The styles are all over the board. You can have, you know, fruity, uninteresting, simple. And then, like in Alsace, it's taken very seriously, you know, above Riesling and Gewürztraminer, which are probably the best sellers. But in that particular part of France, it's taken very seriously as probably the
best.
And
if you really want to know this flavor profile, buy them from Alto Adige.
California Wine Country with Dan Berger. And when we left off, we were talking about an interesting Bledel wine, Pinot Gris, if I pronounced that correctly. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of take it from where we left off there. Some of who wants to start?
Well, one thing thoughts? I did say during the break was that Pinot Gris is one of the few grape varieties I know that has really two separate lives. One is as a very, very young wine where it's spicy and aromatically challenging because it's got so many aromatics in it. But then instead of losing all those aromatics, they begin to change in about 5 years in the bottle. This wine is only if it comes from a cold region. If it comes from a warm region, forget it, it's not going to age. But if it does come from a cold region, it will age some. And some of the best that I've ever tasted are 5 years old. Now, they're different, completely different from when they're released. Mm-hmm. What do you have in your cellar that proves that?
So perfect segue into right before the harvest of 2018, my cellar staff and I decided we would, because we're all Pinot Gris freaks, which doesn't happen very often, right?
It takes everybody on the same page.
To get everyone there and like into Pinot Gris takes a lot. And we did a vertical tasting of Bledel Pinot Gris from 2009 to 2017. And it was actually fascinating. It showed two things. One, it showed this vineyard that I've been talking about that I love, the Mary's Vineyard. You can feel that vineyard come of age as the years go on. You can just feel the presence of the quality, the depth, the style of wine, just really takes on that vineyard as more and more percentage of the wine, all the way up to 2014, which was finally 100% vintage of that wine, you know, you hit this stride of it. And the 14s and 15s were showing great. I mean, I think the 2014 was my favorite of all of those wines. And this was something we did in 2018, just last year. So it's a four-year-old Pinot Gris, and it showed great. And if you go to Alsace and you drink Grand Cru Pinot Gris, you know, from like Ostertag, a great one of my favorite producers.
It's really good.
And you drink a 10 or 12-year-old Pinot Gris from their Grand Cru Pinot Gris vineyards. And I forget the name of it. You guys will know. It's slipping my mind.
Eyes, I can never keep them straight.
It's awesome, right? It's just awesome. And this is a Grand Cru vineyard that's predominantly Riesling, right? And the Riesling is like 90% of it. And the Pinot Gris is like 1.4 hectares or something. It's like this tiny little corner in this Grand Cru Alsatian vineyard. And that's really when you have a special spot for Pinot Gris, you get special wine. And it's not a varietal that can plant everywhere. And when you take it, and I always think about this, when you take Pinot Gris, which is a close cousin to Pinot Noir, I mean, the DNA is so close that it's like one or two mutations that make Pinot Gris this dark bronzy and Pinot Noir black dark. And they're like closer than cousins. They're almost twins, right? It's that close in terms of the structure. The leaves are the same. The cluster size is the same. The structure is the same. And when you take Pinot Gris and you put it next to your very best Pinot Noir vineyards, like very best Pinot Noir vineyards, this is the wine you get. It needs love, and it needs the right spot, and it needs to have this land and caring to show what it can do. I think it's one of the greatest varietals of white wine out there. I think it's second.
But let's not make a broad generalization, because some people might think that Pinot Grigio from any other place in the world is going to be the same thing. Grown in a warmer climate with no restrictions on its yield pattern in the vineyards, and with no particular attention in the winery, this is really maybe the most boring grape of all.
and rightfully so. I mean, I really feel that, you know, these Italians in the warmer part of Italy, when they're just – I call it turning the crank or feeding the goat or whatever it might be, you know, where you just crank it and all this bottled Pinot Gris comes out the other end. They've really ruined, in my opinion, what Pinot Gris can be. And if you're not going to pay attention, if you're just going to turn the crank, well, it's a very, very boring, terrible wine. Mm-hmm. And it's something I battle every day, because I make this wine. I go, oh, I have this great Pinot Gris, and everybody shrugs like, oh, yeah, well. Yeah. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. And then I have to get enough to convince them to put it in the glass.
Yeah.
And then once they do, they go, oh, well, I didn't know Pinot Gris could do this. And I'm like, yeah, it does, and it can, and it should, if it's treated right from day one.
It's a worthwhile cause, and just ridiculously reasonable right now. And that could change.
There's a lot of ordinary Pinot Gris that's bringing the price of this stuff down, and it's unfair to the good ones.
Yeah.
So you have a red Pinot Noir.
I do. I have a I have a couple, actually. Oh, I have two Pinots and I was leaving the winery and I couldn't choose. So I'm gonna go this way. I'm gonna start with our 2015. This is a 18 barrel Pinot Noir. So this is a blend that I started in 2013. And I started this blend really because when I'm making my single vineyard wines for Belletto Vineyards, I get tempted by evil to cheat and add something from a vineyard that would make it non-vineyard designate. And I've always been 100%. If this is a wine from Sexton Hill, or if this is a wine from Burnside Road, it is 100% from that vineyard. And so in 2013, I had the chance to pull out about four different lots from three different vineyards. And I was like, I love this wine, but it's too tart and it's too tannic and it doesn't have a home in any of the other blends. And so I pulled the wine out to really showcase what Sebastopol Hills, again, the same area as the Pinot Gris, what this area can do in terms of, like, okay, I'm going to step away from single vineyard and I'm going to talk about just region. This is the region to me of Sebastopol Hills. So it's not fruity. It's more spicy. It's more acidic. It's more tannic. It's really, to me, a classic cool climate style of Pinot Noir. this is the 2015, so this is the third time that I've made this blend. And to me, it really every time just shows in this very focused, very spice-driven, very tannic structured quality of Pinot Noir.
The raspberry, the cranberry, the spice component that you talked about, the tannins are not aggressive. It's more, I think, a structural element to allow the wine to taste fine with food right now. But I can admit, I think your pH is probably right in the wheelhouse for aging this wine. So it's right around 3.5, I'm guessing. And it's got some flavor profiles that are really young and still vibrant. They need more time to develop out.
Agreed. And this is, you know, a 2015. So it's not like the earlier wines that we opened that were sort of like just babies.
Yeah.
This wine has had, you know, 3 years in the bottle. I'm hoping that it has 8 to 10 more in the bottle. And you know, there's a lot of talk about aging wine. And to me, it's great if a wine makes the distance. But the goal for aging wine should be that the wine evolves and changes and ideally improves. You know, I think there's a lot of times we open older wines and it's like, yeah, that's pretty good. But when you hit a wine at its peak, and Dan, you've done this, and you know, we've all done it, right? Mm. And you hit the wine at its peak where the savory element matches the fruit element, matches the tannin element and the acid element, and you hit the wine when it's all perfect, you know, that's the pinnacle. And I'm hoping, and I think based on this is about 2 years down the road when it hits that. So
when it has its moment, when it's really
when it has its moment,
comes
and
together.
it could be longer and it could be shorter. You know, that's why you need to buy a case,
right? That's what makes it interesting.
And taste it, you know, every other month or every other year until you really know where it is.
If I hadn't known the vintage, I would have guessed 16 because it's really still tight and a little bit withdrawn. But it's coming out of its shell. I made Pinot Noir in 82 and 83, and 82 was not bad, and 83 was the first and only vineyard-designated vintage-dated vinegar. So I have one bottle left. It's got the vintage date. It's got the vineyard on it. What I like about Pinot Noir in this stage is that it's all fruit. But it has those spice components, and as this begins to change and evolve, it's going to do so one of two ways. Either when you open it and decant it, or you just let it sit in the bottle.
Yeah. Just starting to layer out, just starting to develop a little, you know, multiple layers of flavor. You get the initial fruit hit, and then some of that spice comes out. Nice soft tannin, so I really like that.
And then, the first year was 2013, and we did a 13, 14, 15 vertical of this right before harvest as well. And it was, you could just feel the evolution and what this wine needs to really start showing what it can do. There's wines that should be consumed early and there's wines that could be consumed later. People will always ask me, well, when should I drink this wine? And to me, and you guys can pipe in, it's always, how do you like your wine? You know, do you want something that's more fresh and more fruity and more vibrant, or do you want something that has a little bit more depth, a little bit more interesting, a little bit more weight, something that's less focused and more broad?
You know, it depends what component you value the most.
Exactly, and there's no correct answer.
Yeah, it could be intensity, it could be subtlety, it could be any number of things. And I get it in the store all the time. What people are looking for is vastly different all the time.
Now, the 16 you brought says winery block on it, and that's probably a different selection, I'm guessing.
Yeah, completely different selection. So this 2016 Pinot Noir is obviously wines from directly around the vineyard. So directly around the winery. You know, the tasting room is right on Occidental Road, so between Santa Rosa and Sebastopol. And this is the selection from that location. And interestingly about that location is it's a big vineyard for Belletto Vineyards, and I'm only taking of all of that planting about 3 acres of Pinot Noir from that. And when I first started working at Belletto Vineyards years ago, I was walking down rows and I was tasting Pinot on the grapes. Pinot grapes on the vine, and everything was good. And I walked about 20 rows west, And the Pinot just really changed, and it became something distinct and unique. And I instantly put my fingerprint on these wines. I made the first Winery Block Pinot Noir in 2007. So this is the 16. So
is
a lot
that primarily
of
the
years.
Soil that you think that is the change, or
definitely,
is it a different exposure?
It's definitely the soil, 100%. What's kind of crazy and counterintuitive is the Laguna de Santa Rosa borders the western edge of that property, and you know, for thousands of years of floods ebbing and flowing, what happened is the heavier particles stayed down low where I'm harvesting this, and the silty clay particles traveled far. And so this is a band of sandy soils that really makes this wine distinct and pretty.
Well, Anthony, I thank you for all that. I noticed we didn't quite get to all the wines in your bag. I guess next time we're just going to have to apply ourselves a little more diligently to get through them all.
Well, we got to cut Dan off, right, Jeff? We got to keep him from talking. We'll drink, taste
well,
more.
Well, Dan is working. He's doing his job over here. So, this has been California Wine Country with Dan Berger, Belletto Vineyards. We have Anthony Beckman from Belletto Vineyards, and, of course, Barry Herbst from Bottle Barn, the place to purchase any of these wines that we've been discussing. Thank you guys for coming in.